2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Ever snore so loud it registered as an earthquake, or you woke up with a throat as dry as the Sahara Desert and a headache that could stop a locomotive? Well, I've had all of these because I have sleep apnea. Hi, I'm Scott Mitchell. Yep, I wear a machine plugged into a wall attached to a hose every night. Sound Sleep Medical changed all of this for me, and they can do that for you. They specialize in providing oral appliance therapy for individuals suffering from sleep disorders. In many cases, oral appliances have proven to be as effective as CPAP machines in treating sleep apnea. The lack of sleep is a serious health risk and has been linked to heart disease, stroke, diabetes, and even depression. The oral appliance I got from Sound Sleep Medical has freed me from a hose. I can go anywhere, and I've never slept better. Call Sound Sleep Medical today. Seriously, for a limited time, the first 25 people that call get a free consultation worth $200. Call 801-783-5451. It's 801-783-5451.
Welcome back into another edition of the Jazz Notes Podcast, powered by KSL Sports. My name is Cleon Wall. Thanks for listening, downloading, and subscribing. Wherever you listen to the podcast, that could be Apple Podcasts, it could be radio.com, kslsports.com, or you could be listening on the KSL News Radio app. We just appreciate you listening. This is another draft edition. Boy, let me spit that one out. This is another draft edition of the Jazz Notes Pod. We are about a week away, so let's jump right into it. This time, we're focusing on the Volunteer State, Rocky Top, University of Tennessee, any way you want to phrase it. We're going to be talking about Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield. Both of those guys, or I should say one of those guys, could end up in Salt Lake with next week's draft when the Jazz pick 23rd. Williams looks to be a smallish power forward in the NBA. Schofield could probably play the 2, 3, or possibly even the 4. He's a cut dude, so he could probably play all of those positions. So I reached out to Wes Rucker, who is a senior writer at GoVols 24/7, about the two guys, and we started off talking about Williams. Two-time SEC Player of the Year, All-American, plays piano, wasn't really highly recruited. You know, when you think about it, how can you not like this guy? It seems like he's exceeded expectations all the way around, especially when it comes to coming to Tennessee and playing for this Vols team.
You know, believe it or not, you named one of the instruments. He can play up to, like, I think 7 instruments. He is a fascinating kid. You start covering basketball and start covering football, and you meet different kinds of guys. But I don't know that I've met any quite like Grant Williams before. He is his teammates used to say he was, like, the biggest nerd that any of them had ever known. And they meant that in a very loving way, obviously. It's not like, you know, I mean, that was their brother, but he is a fascinating guy. He has all kinds of interests that extend outside basketball. And, you know, in football, sometimes they look at that as a bad thing. But in basketball, you don't see that as much, which is good. You know, he's a cultured kid. I think his mom worked for NASA. His dad was a bodyguard for, like, Prince and Michael Jackson and some of those guys back in the day. So this is, you know, he comes from a very eclectic, very interesting family, and he's a very sharp kid. And I really enjoyed getting to know him the past few years and covering him. And I think, you know, it'll be interesting next season to cover a season where he's not there, because he's been a guy for the past few years who's been really, really fun to cover.
Sounds like he's a guy that could fit in well with this Utah Jazz team, at least when it comes to community and team-wise. But let's talk about his actual ability on the court. You know, you look at pictures of him, I would describe him as he looks a little roly-poly, but, you know, maybe that's not good. But he also looks like he has, I don't know, old man strength. I don't know how to describe it. It just looks like he's a pretty big, strong dude who's going to be able to match up with anyone strength-wise.
Yeah, you know, he's gotten a little more cut up in recent years. He was definitely much chubbier when he got to Tennessee, but they have a really good strength coach there named Garrett Maidenwald. Of course, he also has to stand next to Admiral Schofield a lot, and anyone's going to look a little bit chubby when they get next to Admiral Schofield, who I think has negative percent body fat. But you know, he's interesting because he's a better athlete than it looks like he is, but he does look sometimes like, wow, how did he do that? You know, he does have a nice wingspan, so he's able to get away with some things in that way, but he knows how to use his body, and he's kind of a throwback player in that way because, you know, he can go play above the rim, he can go do those things, but, you know, he also just has this kind of some of these old man YMCA moves or something. Like, it's just, he knows how to spin, he knows how to get his body turned around, he knows how to get to the perfect angle on his jump shot. He just has an understanding for timing on defense. He knows how to play the game. And, you know, that's something that I think when you're a guy who maybe isn't always the best athlete out there, you have to learn how to play the game in order to be really good at it. And I think he did that growing up. And then I think when he became a better athlete, that just took him to another level.
He looks like he's going to be a guy who could play that, I guess you could say, that Paul Millsap type of role where he looks like he's an undersized four, but he's going to be just fine. But, you know, the buzzword now in the NBA is stretch four. How's his shooting?
You know, I think his shooting is better than people think it is, to be honest with you, as someone who's watched him practice quite a bit the past few years. I think, you know, I don't know that he's ever going to be like one of these, you know, 40% three-point guys, but I think he could have shot a lot more of him at Tennessee. I think because he could do so many other things, especially early in his career, Rick Barnes didn't want him shooting threes. And it's not because he couldn't hit them. It's because Rick Barnes didn't want him getting in that mindset of just standing out there and shooting threes, which he would do if he let him. He can do a lot of other different stuff. So Rick Barnes wanted him to say, listen, go get your shot other ways. You know, no one can stop you down low. You know, learn how to pull up from the mid-range. Learn how to, you know, go left and right. You know, go draw fouls because you're such a good free throw shooter. There's lots of different things he can do. And I think Rick Barnes, it was almost a mentality thing with him. Like, he wanted him to push himself to go do other things because he didn't want him to just sit out there and shoot threes. But that's a part of his game that I think he does have. It's not something that I think he'll ever rely on. But in the modern NBA, especially, I mean, if he's only, what, 6'7", 6'6", his position, he's going to have to stretch it out and shoot a little bit, and I think he knows that. But I think the way that he handles the ball and the way he shoots the ball are better than people think it is.
Grant worked out for the Jazz recently, and one of the comments that Jazz personnel made is that he has extended his shot. He did have a chance to go back and play at Tennessee one year. He's only a junior. Why is it that he feels, I know you think he could go in the mid to lower first round, maybe even second round, depending on how things go. Why did he decide, you know what, now is the time instead of deciding, yeah, maybe next year is the time?
Well, I think there's a few reasons for that. One is he already earned his degree this year, and I think if people look at his academic major, they might not understand this, but that supply side chain logistics degree, Tennessee is one of the best universities in the country for that major. And a lot of kids, even smart kids, take 5 years to get out of that program. He got out of it in 3 years. He's a really sharp kid. And I think that part of it was there. I also think when he and his family and his people looked at this year's draft versus next year's draft, I think they just thought, you know what? It's not that he wouldn't have, it's not that he didn't want to be in school anymore. I mean, he loved his teammates here. He loved Rick Barnes. He loved the staff. He loved the city of Knoxville. And he's beloved here. So, you know, if he had come back, he could have had a chance to maybe say, hey, he was even better as a college player than someone like Bernard King was, which is hard to think about. But, you know, when you think about maybe being a three-time SEC Player of the Year, there's a lot that, you know, that goes into that. And his number and name are already going to be in the Raptors at Thompson Bowling Arena anyway. That's not the issue. It's just that I think when they looked at everything he had done this year, they looked at this year's draft versus next year's draft. They looked at how much more he could maybe expand his game. I think they thought, you know what, it's probably just safer to go ahead and go now because this draft, maybe his position this year is better than it would be next year.
Do you think he's first-round material?
I do. I think that of those guys on the Tennessee roster, they got about three, maybe four guys, you know, who could conceivably be drafted this year. But of all those guys, he's the one to me that I think there's no way he gets out of the first round. Because I just think, and the reason is, it's when people go talk to Grant Williams and people get to know him, I think then they say, yeah. And they do a little bit with Schofield too. They're interesting guys. But they'll go, I can just see someone going, especially late in the first round, like, yeah, I want that guy on my team. And I don't know that all 30-plus teams, I don't know that every team's going to love him, but it just takes one. And when I think of him going through all those interviews and going through all those workouts, I just think one team in that group of 30 or so is going to be like, yeah, I want this guy. So that's why I think he'll go in the first round. I don't think he'll be around early in the second. And I think if he thought he would be a second-round pick, he would have come back to school. I think he and his people were given a pretty good scouting report by the NBA guys at the combine as a team saying, yeah, you know what, if you're there in the 20s, we're taking you.
Let's talk about the other guy who is most likely going to get drafted, and that is Admiral Schofield. You mentioned him. He's a 6'6", solid guy. Looks like he could play guard. Looks like he could also play wing. He says he should be a first-round selection, but most drafts have him in the second round. One draft early on actually had him going to the Jazz. Make his case for him going in the first round.
You know, I think in the NBA, you see a lot of these 3-and-D guys, you know, that's been, I guess, ever since Bruce Bowen and some of those other guys in the years. It's just that's become a, you can entrench yourself in the NBA and make a good living being a 3-and-D guy. And Admiral Schofield has the ability to do both of those things if he is a willing defender, because he has the ability to do it. It's just, will he do it on that end of the court? But offensively, there's no question. Offensively, this kid's got game coming out of his ears. He is, and this, when a guy like Rick Barnes, who's been coaching for 4 decades, says something like, I don't think I've ever had a harder worker than Admiral Schofield, that ought to tell you something. I mean, you look at him and you can tell physically how well he treats himself. I mean, this guy he has a Spartan diet. I mean, he eats clean, works out a couple times a day, lives in the gym, gets up shots all the time, always working on his game. And he has gone from his freshman year at Tennessee until his senior season. He has completely transformed himself as a player. And I think he's a guy who now has a game that is going to be able to find a role in the NBA. Maybe it'll be a late first round pick. Maybe it'll be a second round pick. I don't know exactly yet, but I think when you look at him, he's a guy who kind of fits that league if he'll play some defense, because I know he has the ability to do that. I've seen him do it, but he doesn't do it always consistently. But offensively, the kid brings it every day.
He's 6'6", as I mentioned. I believe he shot 48% from the field, 41 or 42% from the three-point line. You talked about his defense. Do you think, though, because he is so built and he looks, to me, he looks like a brick out there, but I mean, very cut, do you think he could play stretch four a little bit for certain stretches of time?
Yes, I do. In the modern game, I very much do, because he played that position at Tennessee for 3 years, or 2 years, really. And he didn't move out to the wing until probably the last year and a half, couple years of his career. So even in that role that he played a lot more three past couple years, Tennessee had kind of its, you know, murder ball, death ball lineup when he, where they had their kind of game winning lineup, their best rotation. He was the four and Williams was the five in that small ball rotation that they finished games with sometimes. So he has played the four plenty. And he can do that because if you just look at him physically, he really is a tank. I mean, his older brother, O'Brien Schofield, has a Super Bowl ring, played in the NFL for years, the Falcons, Seahawks, maybe another team in there somewhere, Cardinals, I think. But he comes from a family where they just – they have the discipline to do that. I mean, his dad is in the Navy, and his younger brother, General, and yes, his younger brother's name really is General. He is a really good baseball player. So everyone in their family is a good athlete, and they kind of have that disciplined mindset. And he's a guy who, when Admiral Schofield says he's going to do something, including when early in his career when he said, I can play the three, I can play in the NBA, I didn't think there was any way in the world that was going to happen. But I watched him develop and went, you know what? I think he might have been right. When he puts his mind to something, he tends to find a way to do it just because he'll work himself into doing it because he's just an obsessive worker.
Do you think both these guys, meaning Admiral and Grant, do you see them actually breaking into rotations for teams next year? Because it looks like teams they could possibly go to, especially if they go the end of the first round, they could end up on teams that are actually in playoff contention, but maybe not. Maybe if they go to the second round, they go to teams that could play them right away. But either way, do you see them at least breaking into the rotation, whether they're coming off the bench or maybe even starting?
I don't know if they'll be starters. You know, maybe we'll see about that. But I think if you get either one of those guys in a team, especially Grant Williams, you're going to find a way to use them. Because Grant Williams is the ultimate kind of, I don't know how he does it, but he does it guy. And he does it consistently. I mean, I remember in the NCAA tournament, they matched up against Purdue. And, you know, Isaac Haas from Purdue is 7'3", has like a 7'7" wingspan. And he plays a lot of the four for Purdue. So Grant Williams had to match up with him. And Haas scored at will the first maybe 4 or 5 minutes of the game. And then once Grant Williams figured out how to defend him, the kid stopped scoring. And down the stretch, Williams just dominated him. So when he figures you out, when he sizes you up, he just finds a way to get the job done. And I just – he's one of those guys that – I'll throw it this way. One scout for an Eastern Conference team told me that there's going to be a lot of hand-wringing about Williams, like, is he too short? You know, is he not an explosive enough athlete? There's going to be a lot of hand-wringing over him. But at the end of the day, someone's going to say, screw it, I want him on my team. Just because that's what kind of unique player he is. And I think he especially will find a way to be a good player in the league.
Hey, last question for you, Wes. Junior point guard Jordan Bone decided to stay in the draft. Most mock drafts that I've seen have him going in the second round. Why did he decide to leave? Is it one of those things, again, where he thought, you know, I might as well come out this year and start getting experience and get paid, even if it is second round money, rather than come back and maybe not even be drafted next season?
Yeah, you know, I think of all the three guys, he was the guy, and when I say three guys, I mean Schofield last season. When all the juniors kind of this year and the past couple years have declared for the draft, I don't think there were any of them I was more convinced would stay in the draft than Jordan Bone. And I don't think that's an indictment on that he doesn't want to be in college anymore. I think he just wants to be a professional basketball player. And I think that's just what he's had his mind set on. And I think Tennessee staff knew from the second the Bones sort of declared and started exploring his options, I think they knew he wasn't coming back. And that's just because he just is a guy who wanted to go play basketball professionally. And I'm telling you, his upside, of all those Tennessee guys that have been in the program the past couple of years, and I'm including Kyle Alexander in that, who's a 6'11" kid who's really athletic, has only played basketball for a few years. Some NBA teams have had him come do workouts too, and he's a guy who maybe will have to go overseas, maybe play in the G League, but he's going to play basketball because he's such a good athlete at 6'11", and can run the floor so well. But of all those guys, Jordan Bone is the one who I thought at times last year looked the most like he had the most NBA upside of any of them. He is the fastest point guards I've ever seen with the ball in his hands. And I think if you go look at his combine numbers, you'll see that. He put down, I mean, faster numbers than John Wall, Russell Westbrook, all those guys in terms of just running. And I think jumping, he had like a 42.5-inch vertical leap. It's just he's an insane athlete. And he's developed into a much better basketball player because playing point guard for Rick Barnes is not easy to do. He's very demanding on his point guards. And there were times where earlier in his career, Bone thought, I got to transfer. This guy's going to kill me. I can't please this guy. And then one day it's like the light switch just started to kind of flip on. And he became one of the best point guards of college basketball last season. And I think he's the guy of all those guys that is not getting nearly enough discussion because of what his upside could be as a player. I think he might be a G League guy for a year or so. I think he might, you know, sit on at the end of a bench for a couple years. But I think if you look, whoever takes him in 2 or 3 years is going to be really happy that they did that because I think he's that kind of an athlete. And I might be wrong about that, but there have been a couple guys who when they left Tennessee, I said, I don't think – people understand how good of a pro this guy could be. The first one was Josh Richardson, and I was fortunate enough to be right about that one. And the next one is Jordan Bone, because I just look at that league, I look at this kid's talent, and I say, you know what? If he figures out how to play this game, I don't know how many guys can stay in front of him. And I think that is a commodity. I don't care what league you're in, I don't care what sport you're playing. If you're almost always faster than the people you're playing, that gives you a good head start. And I think Bone is just a guy who will go in the second round if he goes at all. But I think whatever team drafts him, we'll be happy with it.
Well, Wes, thanks a lot for all the good information. Maybe we'll have to contact you in the future because BYU's playing Tennessee this year, and we might have to get a preview on Tennessee coming up soon. So thanks a lot for all your good information.
Hey, no problem. Anytime. Have a good one.
More thoughts on the draft after this. All right, welcome back into the Jazz Notes Pod. My thoughts on both Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield. Williams, he is a hustle guy. He's an energy guy. He's a good locker room guy, but ultimately a guy who may slip into the second round, even though some people have him going in the first, some have him going in the second. I just don't think he's far enough to slip for the Jazz to pick him up at number 53. Would the Jazz trade back into the second round, you know, earlier in the second round to grab him? I'm really not too sure about that. I think he would bring a positive vibe to the Jazz if he comes to the Jazz. He would be a good glue guy. So if they got him, I don't really think there are a lot of negatives when it comes to his personality. It's just whether or not he brings enough offense to the game. But if you can get past that, if you can say it would be good to have another glue guy on this team, then maybe Grant Williams is your guy. When it comes to Admiral Schofield, he's a physical specimen. Most mock drafts say he doesn't really have a lot of lateral quickness. Maybe he's a younger version of Jay Crowder, but potentially a better shooter than Jay Crowder. He is a senior, so he's 22 years old. I think he also goes probably in the second round or maybe at the very end of the first round. Again, maybe we see the Jazz move up to try and get him if he goes early in the second round. I don't think he's going to last to number 53 either. I think he looks like he sounds like a great guy. We've heard him in interviews. We've seen stories about him. He seems like a great guy. He seems like he would fit well into the Jazz, and maybe he could take another guy's spot later on. But I don't think the Jazz pick him at 23. Jordan Bone, who also worked out for the Utah Jazz here recently, he could be another guy that the Jazz pick up, and we talked about him in the interview. I'm not sure the Jazz do it, but we'll see. He could be a guy that could be there for the Jazz at number 53. So backup point guard, hey, Jazz could use a point guard. Why not draft a point guard, take a flyer on a guy who could be a good fit for the Jazz? So we'll kind of have to wait and see how that all plays out. But I would probably say all three of these guys either end up after the Jazz pick at number 23 and only Jordan Bone, I think, is the guy who could last to number 53 for the Jazz. I think they all probably end up in the second round, but I think both guys that I talked about earlier, Schofield and Williams, I think they go earlier in the second round. So I really don't think the Jazz are going to draft either of those guys. The one thing is that it seems like with those two guys, no character issues. They could bring some good things to the Jazz, but what the Jazz need most, shooting. Schofield could bring shooting to the Jazz. He was a good shooter in college. But, you know, there'll be some limitations to his game. Williams, again, we've already talked about what he could bring. I also wanted to talk about Bol Bol. On the ESPN draft special recently, that was the guy that ESPN picked for the Jazz with the 23rd pick of the draft. Austin Facer of KSLSports.com thought it would be a good pack, as he could develop into a good outside shooter and be a guy to eventually replace Rudy Gobert, so that you don't have to pay Rudy Gobert a whole bunch of money and keep him around, and that way you could have a more offensive-minded team. You know, I don't agree with that. And I'm probably not fair to Austin. I probably need to have him on at some time and disagree with him on why I think this way, but I just don't think that is the route you go. First of all, the Jazz's needs are at other positions. I think they can find a competent backup center in many different ways, whether that's through signing someone else, staying in-house with a backup center. I really don't think the Jazz are in need of a backup center right now. I think they are in more need of a potential stretch four, just more shooting in general, possibly another wing. I think that's where you go. I think the other thing that you have to worry about is that you would rather not pick a guy who's coming off of foot issues. And all I have to do is say Curtis Borchert. 2002, the Jazz ended up trading for him, and he had some foot issues in college. They decided to go with him anyway. He lasted on the team until 2005, really didn't make an impact, and then he ended up getting traded away and then finally playing in Europe. But he really never made the impact that he could have made because of those foot issues. Bol Bol has some foot issues, and those scare you. You see plenty of guys out there that have had foot issues, really big guys who have had foot issues, that have never really recovered and never been the same again. That's another reason that I think you don't want to draft Bol Bol. Finally, I would say, what is the reason that you want to get of Rudy Gobert? Just because he can't shoot from the outside? Because he's not a consistent scorer? I think he brings more positives in other areas that you would want to keep him around. Just because he struggled against the likes of Houston, and I'm not even going to say he struggled. I'm not even going to say that he was the reason why the Jazz lost that Houston series. I think there are a lot of other reasons why the Jazz lost that series. He played well. Just because he can't score on his own, that he doesn't have a hook shot or a jump shot, or he can't shoot from three consistently, just because he doesn't do those things doesn't mean that you need to trade him away. I think that Rudy Gobert, yes, you're going to have to pay him a lot of money, but I think that Rudy Gobert brings too many positives to this team rather than negatives. I think he's too good to have on this team. Yeah, he does struggle against the Golden States and the Houstons because of their funky lineups that they have, but he can also exploit them in various ways too. I think you can put guys around Rudy who are going to help him out with shooting, good perimeter defense, maybe driving to the basket, maybe even more guys kind of like a Joe Ingles who can, you know, provide Rudy lobs and do different things for him that will keep him happy and involve him in the offense and make him effective. If you have guys like that around him, I think he's going to continue to be successful and you're going to want him on the team. Just because certain teams are going that way at times, and it's really hard to do what Golden State did unless you have all-world players, meaning having your depth lineup, your small lineup, I think that is really difficult to do. Just because other teams say that's the way that you need to go to be successful in the league doesn't mean that the Jazz need to go that way. They have a guy in-house who is tremendous around the rim. And if you can exploit that as much as possible, if you can deter people from getting layups and dunks and force them into mid-range twos or floaters, I think that's a good thing. And if you have one guy that can do that, that not only can your defense do that, which the Jazz can at times, but if you have one guy that can do that, I think you need to keep him around. Again, I probably need to have Austin on at some time to, you know, let him make his argument, but I just think that that would be a bad deal. But we, you know, go and take a look at Austin's article. It's on KSLSports.com, and check it out. Check out all of the content on KSLSports.com. We're really ramping things up when it comes to not only the Utah Jazz, but many other sports on there as we get ready for seasons to come and off seasons, especially with the Utah Jazz too. So thanks a lot for listening to the Jazz Notes podcast. We'll be talking to you again soon, especially next week. We'll get you ready for the draft, who the Jazz could possibly draft. We're going to be talking about that with Jeremiah Jensen, or else at least the guys that the Jazz really like that they would like to draft coming up. And then we'll probably, after the draft is all over, we'll have a post-mortem, me and someone else talking about how the Jazz did in the draft. And that may include actually a trade so that the Jazz don't even pick in the first round. But I think they keep their second rounder, so we'll have to kind of wait and see. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.